Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Negotiation Podcast. I am your host, Todd Embley, and today I am joined once again by Olivia Plotnick, a seasoned expert in China marketing and the founder of Y Social. Today we dive into the explosion of Xiaohongshu, or Red Note, in the United States because of the impending ban of TikTok. Olivia begins with a detailed overview of the current buzz surrounding Red Note, explaining why TikTok users are flocking to this app amidst concerns over the potential ban in the US. She explains the unique features of the platform and highlights the nature of interactions between American and Chinese users on the platform. Olivia shares amusing trends emerging from these interactions and comments on their significance against the backdrop of current geopolitical tensions. The discussion also explores the challenges Xiaohongshu faces as it navigates its newfound popularity in the US, including the complex decisions the platform must make to manage this surge. Olivia provides insights into how both Chinese and international brands might benefit from this trend, the scale of American user adoption, and the sustainability of this growth. Enjoy.
Some video on TikTok started going viral because of the impending TikTok ban in the United States right now. And they were started telling people to go and download this app. They were calling it Red Note. So a lot of people started to download Red and it went viral, and you had thousands and thousands of people start to download it. And, you know, within about a few days, even 24 hours, Red became the most downloaded social networking app on the App Store, which was absolutely insane.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to the Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Olivia, welcome to the Negotiation Podcast again.
Thanks for having me.
So is this your third time on the show?
Yes, third time. Unexpected, but you know, everybody likes a surprise.
I think you are our first triple guest.
Wow. First third timer.
Yes. Amazing. In 5.5 years.
Do I get some negotiation swag? Like, do I get a shirt or like a coffee mug or something?
You know what? I will go hassle the powers that be to make sure that that happens. because you deserve it. I appreciate you coming on the show so many times, but you're one of our most in touch, finger on the pulse people in that area of the world, especially when it comes to what's happening in social media. So I'm really looking forward to understanding, because a lot of things are new, a lot of things have changed. And one of the first things I want to ask you is to give us an overview of actually what's happening this week on Red Note.
Yeah, it's been a wild week that I don't think anybody saw coming. So Red Note, aka Xiaohongshu, aka Little Red Book, aka Red. I'm just going to call it Red to simplify things here. So, you know, I'm not sure of the exact origin video of where this happened, but what I think we can assume is that some video on TikTok started going viral because of the impending TikTok ban in the United States right now. And they were started telling people to go and download this app called, they were calling it Red Note. And, you know, I think there's been some kind of confusion, misinformation out there. A lot of people were saying that it was the Chinese version of TikTok, which is incorrect. There is a Chinese version of TikTok called Douyin, which is the exact same. Red is a completely different platform. It's not owned by ByteDance, by the same people, but it is still a Chinese social media platform. So a lot of people started to download Red and it went viral and you had thousands and thousands of people start to download it. And, you know, within about a few days, even 24 hours, Red became the most downloaded social networking app on the App Store, which was absolutely insane. And you had Chinese users waking up, opening their Red account and having just a flood of Americans on the platform, of English speaking users on the platform. And it started to look exactly like TikTok, which I think kind of reinforced people's miscommunication that it was the Chinese version of TikTok, because they started posting all of their TikTok videos to Red. And then it, you know, obviously starts looking like the platform. This, you know, has the layers of complexity around this are immense. I think there are so many different lenses that we can look at this phenomenon under, and we can go deeper into them. I kind of, you know, have been thinking about this under four major themes. There's, you know, a cultural angle, a political angle, tech angle, and commerce. So, you know, we can dive deeper into each of them. But I think cultural, this is almost like a Berlin Wall moment. But instead of the, you know, the Berlin Wall falling, people are, you know, climbing over the wall. To go back a little bit in history, around, you know, 2008, 2009, up until 2014, you had Western tech and social media platforms leaving China, right? And this wasn't, you know, China completely banning them. This was kind of them being forced out, right? Because they couldn't comply with Chinese internet regulations. And then, you know, you have what went up as the great firewall.
Well, they weren't banned, right? But they were
They weren't banned.
Poisoned. They were so slow. It was, they made them just almost unusable to avoid the actual political backlash of a full out ban.
Exactly. They couldn't comply with the regulations. It just wasn't going to work. And so a lot of them exited. You know, you had LinkedIn, which held on until 2021, but it just, and they made certain features unavailable to Chinese users, but it just became too difficult for them in the end to operate in China. So from about, you know, around 2010, the Great Firewall kind of goes up. And for the majority of Chinese internet users called netizens, they really don't have direct contact with internet users from the outside world, right? And vice versa. And so all of a sudden, now you have all of these American users downloading Red. And for the first time in a lot of internet users' lives, because a lot of people who are on Red are millennial and Gen Z, you have access to the outside, you know, world of internet users. And so initially we're seeing this massive, like, you know, two cultures discovering each other for the first time, right? You know, talking about, asking each other questions about how much, you know, do you pay for rent? What is the healthcare system like? Exchanging, you know, language learning. So really, overall, in the beginning, like a very positive, very heartwarming experience. You know, I think it's been, in a way, it was great to see, because you had these two sides who have been so, you know, overrun by political propaganda from both sides. You have propaganda from the Chinese government. You have propaganda from the U.S. government, you know, talking in disparaging ways about either side. And so you have kind of this animosity that was created politically. And then when people were able to connect directly, you know, they're saying, our politicians aren't representative of our own views. We really like Chinese people. We're curious. We're interested, you know, and vice versa. So you have this huge kind of monumental, I think, moment in history of cultural exchange. Now, we can put a pin in that. I don't know how long that is going to last, but I think that's, you know, a major cultural moment. Another kind of lens under that cultural umbrella, looking at American Gen Z users who basically were trying to stick up the middle finger to the US government and say, F you for doing this. We're going to now go to another Chinese platform because you had actual, videos and comments from American users saying that they would rather trust China with their data than the US government, that they would rather learn Mandarin than hop on another or then use Meta's platform. So I think if I was, in the US looking at Gen Z, I would be paying really close attention to this aspect of it, that people are just so incredibly fed up. And there's just so much mistrust in the government and US organizations that they are willing to, use this app that's not in English. Some people are using like 3 to 4 different apps in order to, take a screenshot, translate something, add captions, go back and post it. We're all about convenience and seamless user experience these days. And, people are willing to go above and beyond just to use this app so that they don't have to use another app. Now, again, going back to thinking about the longevity of this whole situation right now, that is not sustainable in its current form. But I do think those are two huge, big, cultural moments. From a tech perspective, I think it's very interesting to look at Americans now discovering super apps. So you had Chinese social media platforms develop quite differently than Western platforms. For the most part, Western platforms have been more single use, single function, until recently when they've actually started to copy a lot of the functionality of Chinese platforms. But basically, you have a lot of apps in China that are super apps. So they have multifunctionality. You have social media, you have e-commerce, you have ways to pay your utility, book train tickets. You can do everything within one app. And now this influx of new American users on to Red, they're really discovering how much you can do in one platform. I think it's been very interesting to watch them discover, not only posting photos and videos as you can do pretty standard across any app, but they can participate in live streaming very easily. They can do audio rooms. There are e-commerce features that they're discovering. Of course, you can't ship to America yet, and it would be very hard for them to purchase on it, but they're discovering all these different functionalities within one app. And so I think that is a very interesting and new development for them. I think a lot of people have been speculating the rise of, social commerce in the West, and when is that, going to take off? That's been rather slow, according to people's predictions. And so I'm wondering, a potential outcome of this could be faster adoption of, kind of a super apps in the West now that people have experienced that. But I think that is a very small potential outcome under that umbrella. Now, you have a big kind of political lens that you can look at this under. There's obviously, I think, a lot to be discussed under this. But one of the main things, and this goes into how long is this going to last? I think this puts the Chinese government in a very tricky position at the moment. And Xiaohongshu is kind of in the middle of this as well, right? Xiaohongshu needs, Red needs to comply with Chinese internet regulations baseline. Now, this could result, there's speculation of, okay, well, could Red, create an entirely separate platform for its English language users to then satisfy that, as ByteDance has done, with creating Douyin and TikTok. I think if you look at that realistically, I would be very surprised if that is the way that they went forward. Red has commented that they had no plans to expand to the US. They have been trying for the past few years to, bolster their profitability. They plan to IPO in Hong Kong. I think the only overseas markets that they were really eyeing was Southeast Asia. So not focused on making anything for the English language speaking market. That would seem to be a huge, investment and divergence of resources that at a time when the other, Chinese app is being banned in the US for being Chinese. So I'm not sure, why that would ever be a smart idea for them. I think, you know, on the flip side of this, for the U.S. government, obviously they're, you know, facing quite a lot of pressure for the ban or enforcing the ban. I don't know enough to comment or go deeply into that, but I would predict that the ban doesn't get enforced somehow and people are still able to use TikTok. But let's see about that. And I think, you know, the fourth arm of this is commerce. Now, this is there's a short term and a long term. Short term, I think it has been interesting to see Chinese brands starting to create English content and be given basically all this free traffic to the American market. I saw Luckin Coffee, which is a domestic Chinese coffee brand, and they had actually announced a few months ago that they were planning in 2025 to start opening up stores in the US. Now, it's probably, you know, they were probably devising a whole marketing strategy, how to reach US consumers, everything. And then all of a sudden you had this flood of American users onto a platform that you're already a part of. And so they had made a few, you know, funny posts like, welcome to all of my new American friends. Unfortunately, when you're reading through the comments of that post, it didn't really attract, I think, the attention they were hoping for. It mostly had comments from only Chinese users who were, you know, basically taking a piss out of Luckin Coffee for trying to use this kind of moment to advertise to Americans. They were like, you know, kind of making fun of them for how cheap they were, you know, making fun of them for posting at the wrong time. So, you know, a little bit of humor there. I think in the long term, it's quite interesting because this is a huge PR opportunity for Red to attract, you know, overseas brands onto the platform. For years, I think WeChat has kind of been the most you know, famous or recognized Chinese social media platform outside of China. Especially when I talk to global brands, a lot they have this, you know, they've heard of WeChat, they know Chinese are using it. Xiaohongshu is quite lesser known. So if anything, this is a great advertisement for Red, right? Of brands who think, oh, okay, hey, I've seen this before. I know Chinese users are on it. I kind of get the idea of it now. And maybe we should think about opening up official account and starting to sell and doing things that. So I think it's interesting in that for the long term. Third, you know, topic under this commerce umbrella, huge PR campaign for China tourism. So, you know, the Chinese government has been trying to get international tourism back up and running again. They've issued a number of visa-free policies for a lot of countries, you know, saying you can come in without the hassle of trying to get a Chinese visa for, you know, 7 to 14 days to many, many countries. And that hasn't really been paying off. They haven't really been seeing big results of that. And now you have, you know, thousands and thousands, potentially hundreds of thousands of people being exposed to, you know, culture in China, cities, music, people. And what an amazing way to advertise, hey, come visit China. I think, you know, they will need to think about this when they start trying to tamper down or putting in place content moderation policies, because they could really screw that up for themselves if they kind of handle that badly and then people get a really bad impression of China. You know, that's just going to undercut this whole opportunity for them. But I do think that's a very interesting kind of opportunity for brand China to attract international users.
When you said this might be the first time that international, especially American users, face moderation, I think there has been instances in the past before, you know, and, you know, Facebook most famously not doing moderation well. I think the first instance was the first time the 2016 election that Trump was in and trying to moderate things there. And the second was COVID. And, you know, and Zuckerberg most recently on the Joe Rogan podcast came out and was talking about how much pressure he and his team received from the Biden administration to start shutting down certain narratives and whatnot. And there was, from what I could see, a lot of like, this post is hidden or this, you know, and people were kind of screaming about it. And then it's so interesting now because this Red Note explosion has coincided very, very closely to Facebook coming out and saying, all right, we're not going to moderate. We're going to undo a lot of what we did. Right. So, and that also has to play. I mean, are those two going to go in different directions?
I think the timing of it is so hilarious.
It is. So that was the word I was going to use.
Yes, I don't know what else to describe it as, but I think it just points to, like, you know, that is like a flip flop, you know, and I just think people are so, especially Gen Z, and they're just so fed up with it. Like, are you going to censor things? Are you not? You know, you're flip flopping, you know, to the government side. Like, it just creates more mistrust. You know, people are still going to use Facebook and Instagram. It's not like they're going to, obviously there've been people deleting their Facebook and Instagram. I don't think that's going to happen in big numbers. But I do think it points to like this gap in the market, for platforms that people trust somehow. And, you know, you've had like Blue Sky try to come in and fill that. And you have Mastodon who've kind of tried to come in and fill the vacuum from Twitter when that whole, well, kind of still continuing, but that whole fallout is happening. But no one's been really able to kind of gain that trust and fill that void yet.
I want to move forward, but before I do, for those who missed the last episode that you were on, would you mind just giving maybe like a quick overview of the interface, content mix, unique features, user base of Red Note or Xiaohongshu or Red Little Red Book?
Yeah. Whatever. Let's meet in the middle. Red. I keep calling it Xiaohongshu as well. Let's call it Red. So Red was launched in 2013. So it really hasn't, you know, been around for that long. It's typically known as a platform for, you know, product discovery, reviews. Think of it as, you know, Google search. So people are going in there, they're searching for keywords, searching for long tail keywords, products, brands will come up, really detailed product reviews, very authentic reviews of products. So it's a platform for discovery. You have typically a lot of lifestyle content, a lot of beauty content, a lot of, you know, fashion, a lot of travel content on there as well. F&B, the demographics are more female. And so about 70% female, 30% male, and typically from higher tier cities. So first, second tier cities. Now, this, I think, has created, and up until now, I don't think I appreciated the significance of this that much, but it has been very apparent. And as these, you know, American users have been coming on, that specific user demographic is really, really unique for a social media platform. And that doesn't really exist on any of the major Western social media platforms. The gender split is pretty even. I would say the demographic split. Yeah, maybe Etsy or Pinterest, but like not something like Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok, right? It's pretty even. Maybe X, you know, has a larger male user base, but people are coming on to Red, and I think this impacts the type of content on there and the type of community on there. And so people have been coming on to Red, and these users are like, wow, such a great community. Everybody is so welcoming. Everybody is so nice. Everybody is so positive. I think, you know, that kind of does have something to do with the large female, like a little bit more affluent community base on there. If let's say that they had, you know, landed into Weibo somehow, I don't think they would have gotten necessarily the same reception on Weibo as they did onto Red. This also, you know, impacts a lot of the content on there. The content is very, you know, value driven. And you hear a lot of Red creators who are now, you know, describing, hey, this is what type of content you should post on there. And, you know, trying to teach people about what to do. You know, they want very value driven content. They want things that are really positive, uplifting. They want to create community. So that's a very, very unique feature. Now, going back to kind of, okay, what does the app look like? What can you do? You know, you can, you basically open the app and you have a few different tabs so you can see, you know, who you're following. But when you immediately open the app, you go to a discover page, which is an algorithmic driven page that gives you posts that you might be interested in. We talked about this before on the last episode. I think that this algorithm is much better than the Instagram discover page. It feeds you much more interesting content, much more targeted. And, you know, you don't see, as you do on Instagram or Facebook, sponsored posts in the same way. You're not, you know, when you open up Instagram now, every other post that you see in your feed or when you watch stories is a sponsored post, which drives me nuts as a user. When you open up Instagram, it does feel much more organic. Now, of course, you have influencers and celebrities who are working with brands to create content, but it's not in the same way as you're getting an advertisement shoved at you. So you have a discover page. You can click into a page that will show you only accounts that you are following. You can see content also based on your location, or you can go in because Red has a large e-commerce function. You can go in and look at, you know, different stores on there. Brands can open stores. Creators can open stores. Types of content you can post: images, text, video. You can do live streaming, which is quite advanced. So you can have all different products linked within that live stream. You can easily purchase any of those products which are linked. There is kind of an audio chat room feature, kind of like a Clubhouse, if you remember those days. Yeah. Kind of like Clubhouse built in. You can have, you know, group chats with community on there. So compared to any app that, you know, Americans are used to using, this has a whole host of features in there that can be really exciting and really engaging. And I think makes Xiaohongshu very, very unique in that way.
Okay, let's talk about some of those interactions between the American and Chinese users that you have talked about. Can you comment maybe on some of the exchanges that are notable, given that obviously the geopolitical context and fragmented global internet stuff that we've talked about? I know you've touched on it. I'd like to ask you just to expand a little bit on that.
Yeah. You know, there have, you know, been a fair share of hilarious interactions. I think for the most part, up until now, you know, things move quickly and things change. But up until now, things have been very funny, very positive. You know, you have Chinese users who are demanding, you know, in a kind way, demanding that American users who open up an account on the platform and start sharing content, they have to first pay a cat tax to show that they are real and authentic. So you need to post a photo of your cat or dog. But, you know, Todd, you could, this is the way that you could get into Xiaohongshu. You have your cat now, Lord Vader. Lord Vader can make his Xiaohongshu debut. You can pay your cat tax with that. So that has been pretty funny. You know, I've seen discussions of people talking about, you know, and this is, you know, so Chinese, like, how much do you get paid a month? How much do you spend on rent? You know, how much is your insurance? You know, asking all of these questions, being very, you know, blunt. Yeah, I saw a post from an American girl, and, you know, a Chinese user had commented on it, like, your two front teeth make you look like a rabbit, but you're so cute. You know, it's like, it's all like really positive, really hilarious exchanges. And I think the American users have notably commented on how positive the experience has been so far. Like, you would think that Americans have been in some abusive relationship before, the way that they are so shocked at how welcoming and how nice the Xiaohongshu, the Red community is. They like can't believe how nice people are and how welcoming. Of course, there are, you know, outlying incidents on that. You know, you have celebrities who are joining the platform, Pedro Pascal, Kevin Hart, you know, you have NBA players on there. And, you know, I think for there's two interesting ways that I see this play out in a long-term benefit. One, Chinese creators getting a bigger English-speaking audience onto their other platforms. So there's a really popular Red influencer, Yvonne Du. You know, she has hundreds of thousands of followers on Red. She posted a really hilarious video in English welcoming all of these new, you know, TikTok refugees, what they're calling themselves, welcoming these new TikTok refugees. That hit off because, you know, she was very sarcastic, very edgy. And she has now been getting tons of new followers on her Instagram and on her TikTok. So it's been really cool to see these Chinese creators who are really talented, really good. A lot of them, you know, are younger generation, more affluent. They've studied abroad. They speak English and Chinese perfectly well. So they're getting, you know, this whole new audience, which, you know, is really, really amazing for them. And I think for English creators, discovering how, you know, big their Chinese fan base could be, celebrities and creators who kind of want to build that up for the future are getting exposure to this new audience and could be, you know, long term. I think those are really kind of the only two sets of, people who should be thinking about, okay, now should I, like, what should be my new strategy because of this? I know this is, you know, one of the things that we wanted to discuss is like, should brands now start to have a Red Note strategy? Should they be putting out English, you know, content on there? Should they be, switching? No. As we, you know, have discussed, this in its current form is not going to continue.
No, you got to let the dust settle here.
First of all, like, you have to let the dust settle. Second of all, you know, again, going back to, there is going to be content moderation that is, you know, not going to jive with a lot of American users. The sustainability of, you know, right now, the interface, how long can you expect users to really go through all that trouble to keep using something like this? I don't see Xiaohongshu putting in a huge investment into creating separate apps. Like, I don't see the scenario in which it's beneficial for a brand to think about about reaching English language speaking users on Xiaohongshu. If you are a brand and you want to reach a Chinese audience, either in China or internationally, and you've discovered Red, amazing. Think about, you know, how you're going to reach that Chinese audience. Your English audience is going to go somewhere else. Take this time to really watch and think about what matters to them in this moment. Think about, is this going to, you know, result in a shift in how people use Instagram differently and how people use Facebook differently, you know, in how they use Western social media platforms differently. You know, that's what I would be thinking about, not, oh, do I need to open up a Red account and start posting English language content on there? No, that's I wouldn't do that.
I want to just quickly touch on and put you on the spot a little bit. I'm sorry. Do you have any numbers? Do you have the sense of scale? Like, how many American users have joined since you may have last checked at all?
Yeah, I don't have the exact numbers. I do know it is still top of the App Store for social networking platform. I know that has been surging in the UK as well. It started to rise in the charts there, Australia. So other markets, people are discovering it. I will say that the current numbers of traffic that this is getting, you know, people are getting views, comments, collects in the thousands, which is really unprecedented. So the surge in traffic is quite monumental, but it's, you know, it's not going to last. It's going to start tapering off like within days. I mean, you have January 19th coming up in a few days, and that's going to offer a pretty big, I think that's going to be a quite deciding factor.
Are you speaking about the inauguration?
Well, I think that's the date when it's like, okay, is the ban going to be enforced or not? Before that happens, is there going to be, you know, this whole thing happened within a matter of like 2 to 3 days. It got really popular. You know, we're still 2 to 3 days out from January 20th. Something massive could happen that, you know, people just start leaving the platform and get fed up. So I really think that this is limited to weeks, if not days, for the majority of users.
I guess at the end, because a lot of our audience are brand owners and brand decision makers, I want to speak to them and help guide them. So let's talk about brands, both Chinese and international brands. What are they doing? What, in your opinion, like what should they be doing? What is your advice? Any brand implications to speak of? Any leveraging of this trend that can be taken advantage of? I'll let you run with that to finish this off.
I want to bring up a really important point to consider as well. And I think this is especially if I were Xiaohongshu and if I were a brand that has been running a Red account in China for a while, who has one currently, like, you know, should I jump on this trend? I would be really cautious about protecting my Chinese user base. You know, a lot of Chinese users are starting to post that they are getting really kind of annoyed with this cut. You know, they open up their Red app now and it's like this flood of TikTok videos, which is not why they go to the app. So I would be worried about losing those users. That's why I would be cautious about jumping on this trend and trying to capture traffic, because the traffic that you're going to capture right now is either all of these American users who aren't going to stay on the platform necessarily long term, or Chinese users who are going to make fun of you for trying to, you know, ride this trend, as we kind of saw with Luck and Coffee's post, where everybody just went in and made fun of them for trying to kind of like pander to all these new American users. So I would be really, really careful about what you post and how you post and why you're doing it right now while all of this craziness is going on. And consider, like, really remind yourself, who are your core Red users? Why are they on that platform? Why are you on that platform? What type of content are you providing them? So that, I think that's for brands, you know, who are on the platform right now, who are like, what do I do with all these American users? You know, be really careful. I don't think that this is necessarily, in most cases, a trend that you want to hop onto. Again, for brands who are just, you know, learning about Red, discovering it, I think keep an eye out potentially for, you know, creators who are getting a lot of creators and celebrities who are getting a lot of traction on the platform and attracting a lot of Chinese fans. Like, can, you know, are there opportunities to partner with them and promote your products? Like, just be on the lookout for what are people interested in. Brands spend a ton of money to figure out what is going to be their hero product in China, right? Because it's usually not what you expect. Perfect testing ground to see what people are interested in. Because if you go in and you look at, you know, videos that Americans are posting, you will see on some of the videos that people are really interested in certain products. They're like leaving comments, hey, send me the product link for that hoodie you're wearing. Hey, send me the product link for that water bottle. I would be going in there and trying to figure out what products and what brands are being exposed kind of for the first time to this audience of, you know, domestic Chinese audience, and what are they interested in, and should I be, you know, bringing that product to China now? So I think those are the opportunities. Both involve observation, I think is the key word right now. Both involve calculated observation.
Olivia Plotnick, founder at Y Social, and obviously an expert on all things China marketing. Thank you very much for coming on the show once again.
Thank you so much.
Okay. As usual, for those of you watching the video on the WPIC YouTube channel, don't forget that we have the podcast audio only version on all your favorite podcast platforms and vice versa. If you want to see the video in its full form, go check out the WPIC YouTube channel. You will find it there. For those who want to get in touch and give us some advice or hopefully a guest recommendation, that would be wonderful. You can reach us at podcast@wpic.co. And if you don't mind, if you are willing, give us a 5-star review. That also helps the algorithms and feeds those algo monsters so that more people can be aware and absorb some of this amazing content that comes from people like Olivia. From me and Olivia and everybody at the negotiation team, thank you very much for listening and or watching. We'll see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.